Hi, thanks for listening in. This is Mary Blue, and this is my politically compassionate herbalism webinar. I came up with the term politically compassionate as a play on the words politically correct. I found that in having conversations on these sensitive political subjects, no one was correct. And the important thing is just to be compassionate and understanding and have an awareness that everybody has deep feelings about these issues. I began my herbal path as a social justice activist in the late 90s, and I worked as an organizer and an herbalist during the anti-globalization movement from 2000 till about 2010. I helped organize and provide herbs for street protests, pop-up clinics, disaster relief, and provided direct herbal support for organizers who were really burnt out. And I noticed during this time that the conversations that were happening in the social justice community weren't happening in the herbal community. And I really wanted to see herbalists connect social justice and healing with herbs. So in 2006, I decided I needed to build a community-oriented herbal business with social justice principles incorporated into it. And 10 years later, Pharmacy Herbs Community Health and Education Center is flourishing and growing. And I just wanted to briefly touch upon our programs that are rooted in social justice and health justice principles. Pharmacy Herbs is located in an urban area in Providence, Rhode Island. Our store has been open for 8 years. We offer medicinal herbs, large selection of medicinal herbs, tinctures, salves, all produced by us on our farm and in our production kitchen. We also offer a resource library for community members to use as they need to. I started offering sliding scale herbal consultations in 2006. And over the last 10 years, I've seen hundreds of clients working to support their health with herbs. We're not treating disease, we're supporting their health. And we've been successful. And in that success, a lot of the patients have told their doctors about me and my work. And I've sort of started developing a relationship with doctors through their patients. And that has since led to me being invited to be a teaching associate at Brown University Medical School, where we are developing a training site for the medical residents in an integrative setting. I also offer many different herbal education programs. All of them are sliding scale based on folks' income. We also do a lot of work trade for our programs, and we offer a lot of free programs. We do one free herbal class a month for the community, and then I have a six-month program that interns can work trade for. And we have a level two program that's a year long and a level three program. All of these are sliding scale and work trade is available for these programs. And really, these programs are what has gotten my business off the ground, getting folks excited about herbal medicine and creating access and making it accessible for them to participate in the program while we build community. Our medicinal herb farm is a large part of our educational programs. We could not run our herb farm without our internship program and work trade. So it's a really great relationship that we create with students where they're able to learn and help us on our farm. And we're able to get all the work done that we need to get done. We grow about 1,000 pounds of herbs per year. We grow a lot of the herbs we use in our tinctures and our salves, all organic and chemical free. It's a 5-acre farm about 20 miles outside of the city. This year we have about 25 interns participating in our programs on our farm and on our site in Providence. The foundation of all these programs is health justice, herbalism, and building community. And I have found that the skills and tools that I need are not visible within these conversations or on the internet or even a box that you check on a registration form. I found that I've really needed to be committed to accountability, flexibility, clear communication, and most of all, fun to make these programs successful. In 2006, I also started working with a group of friends who are also social justice activists and herbalists, and we founded RadHerb, which is a network of herbalists around the United States who are committed to social justice within the context of herbalism. We created annual conferences to get everybody together to have these conversations. We still have those conferences every other year. This is our 10-year anniversary coming up this October. And we also created health justice trainings, which we've been offering in herb schools, at herb conferences, and here now on the web for the last 5 years. So, what are health justice principles? The first one is to create access to all types of healthcare, regardless of a person's race, class, gender identity, age, ability level, cultural or religious or spiritual beliefs. Now, this is a huge task. It's really unrealistic to think that any one herbalist would be able to create access for every single person in the world. That's not what this is saying. This is saying that through these principles and applying them to your practice, anyone who is interested in using herbs would feel comfortable in your care. It's really all about cultural competency and understanding where people are coming from. The second principle is do no harm. This principle creates a healthcare system that does not pollute the planet or our bodies while acknowledging and preventing environmental racism. The first part of this principle is fairly easy for herbalists because herbal medicine is a sustainable medicine. The second part of this principle, acknowledging and preventing environmental racism, requires that herbalists step outside of their practices and become active in their communities. I go back to a quote from Corey Pine Shane, who I was interviewing for the documentary I made, Herbal Aid. And he said, it really doesn't make sense for an herbal practitioner to just treat the whole community for lung issues when they can actually just go and work with the community to create alternative sustainable power sources or to shut down a dirty power plant. This principle also requires herbalists to create access to their services for people who are dealing with environmental racism. The third principle is to work to create a healthcare system that is not based on profits, biased clinical trials, animal testing, trademarking of traditional terms, and cultural misappropriation. This is a big principle. And again, it requires that herbalists step outside of their practices to be active in their community and organize on issues that are important to them. And the first part of the fourth health justice principle, incorporating preventative health care measures into your herbal practice. I believe a lot of herbal practitioners are already doing this. The second part of that is a little bit harder, creating access to non-toxic food. Again, this is going to require herbalists to step outside of their practices and do some community work. The second part of this principle is really all about being an advocate for herbal medicine, which I believe most herbalists are doing a really great job of already. So, in the last 10 years of exploring these topics, we've isolated them into five different subjects that we use in our facilitations and trainings. The subjects are accessibility. This includes accessibility to healthcare, but also to herbal education and herbal therapies. The next subject is a term we call medical isms, and this is a big subject. It has a lot of subcategories within this subject. Sexism, racism, ableism, ageism. The next subject we focus on is called trans health. The trainings incorporate practices that can help an herbalist welcome anyone into their classes or clinics or conferences, regardless of their gender identity. The next subject we explore is mental health. Our trainings focus on neurodiversity. We also focus on language skills for practitioners in this field. The last subject we focus on is called cultural appropriation. This subject is very sensitive for a lot of herbalists because our practices are now being culturally appropriated by corporations, and a lot of white herbalists have been accused of cultural appropriation as well. Again, we don't say we have any right answers within our trainings. We really are just creating the space to have discussions with compassion about all of these subjects. In each of the trainings, we go over historical context of each subject. health justice language skills, and practical ways to incorporate principles into conferences, clinics, and classes. We also offer resources, reading materials for folks to read before the training. In working to create the space for these conversations, we realized that we needed to have facilitation tools. And we decided to utilize popular education as a form of learning. And popular education itself is rooted in social justice, and it is a participatory learning process. And it's meant to be empowering for the individuals that participate. Rather than utilizing methods of teaching that where the teacher holds all the knowledge that the students need, popular education utilizes the fact that people have the knowledge and power they need to determine what's best for themselves and their communities. And some of the practices we utilize in our trainings regarding popular education are creating ground rules for communication. We place chairs in circles so that communication is face to face. And we facilitate group activities, which can be anything from discussion groups, acting groups, drawing. And I just wanted to quickly address the ground rules that we use in these trainings, and I also use them in my herb school, in the clinic, and at our conferences that we organize. And these ground rules, that we also refer to as guidelines, they work to create a shared understanding of how to participate in a classroom setting based on respect and equality. I have them present in the classroom, in the class materials, and I present them to all my classes on the first day of class. I also make sure that any visiting teachers have these guidelines and understand the space that we're creating here. We also allow for open engagement and questions about the guidelines. I'd like to stress that these guidelines are not meant to stifle opinions, thoughts, or statements. They are used as a reminder and as a tool for clear, compassionate communication in conversations that are potentially emotional and where people will have different opinions. The first ground rule is we are committed to nonviolence, anti-oppression, and compassion with all communication that takes place within our classroom. This means we're going to avoid any racist, sexist, homophobic language. We're going to avoid insulting people based on their backgrounds or their class. This ground rule really just creates space for anyone who might be marginalized or feel oppressed. It creates the space for them to know that they're supported in your classroom. This ground rule really speaks for itself. Speaking from experience adds validity and builds trust within the group. We all have answers and valid experiences. This guideline really requires active participation, trust, and active listening within the group. In all of these subjects that we've created for our health justice trainings, we realize that sometimes it's potentially traumatic to talk about issues like this, and very emotional. So in all these trainings, we just ask folks to have an awareness about the things that they bring up. A trigger warning can be about sexual abuse or trauma or racism or homophobic behavior. Within this guideline, we also acknowledge that we are not responsible for others' emotions or experiences. So there is a balance here. In all of our trainings, we encourage people to share their stories, and we do not want to put a gag on anyone. So a trigger warning is really just sort of a friendly way of saying, hey, I'm going to talk about something messed up. If you don't want to hear it, leave the room. And then whoever wants to participate can participate. The next guideline is really all about creating space. We ask people who often talk a lot, challenge yourselves to listen more. And we ask people who don't talk that much to speak up. We really want to hear what you have to say. The last guideline is pretty simple. Be aware of time and stay on topic. We only have a very limited time together, whether it's in an herb class, a clinic, or in a health justice training. And we really encourage folks to stay on topic. Of course, There's always exceptions to the rule when people need to work out some emotional issues or finish conversation. We do make room for that. The next thing we address in our health justice conversations and trainings is cultural competency. The official definition of cultural competency is a set of congruent behaviors, attitudes, and policies that come together in a system, agency, or among professionals and enable that system, agency, or those professionals to work effectively in cross-cultural situations. We've created a questionnaire that's intended to gauge the participants' experience with and knowledge of culturally diverse communities, healthcare issues, and needs. There are no right answers on this questionnaire. It's really just to engage where participants need to focus their training. It's really a tool for creating spaces where diverse populations can feel comfortable within your care. The end result is usually a better healthcare practitioner. And why is it so important for herbalists to incorporate health justice principles into their practices? I like to quote Rosemary on this. Herbalists are a rather passionate group of people, and as a whole, are used to standing up for what we believe in. We have a long history of being persecuted and standing up even in the face of fire, pirates or not. Historically, herbalism has been an accessible modality of healthcare to the masses. I like to quote my friend Betsy Bancroft on this one. In her classes, she talks about herbalism historically has always been the medicine of the people. And as herbalists, we need to actively protect it by keeping it accessible to the masses, which means we need to learn how to bring it to the masses, which means exploring cultural competency, addressing our own privileges, and standing in solidarity with the anti-oppression movements that are happening all over the world right now. And we are doing this, and we have done this. Historically, herbalists have had their fair share of marginalization. And we've had to fight, and we still are fighting for our rights just to be herbalists. So let's delve a little bit deeper into these subjects, and we're going to talk about some different tools that you can use to introduce these subjects and these trainings to your practice. And we'll start with accessibility. This is all about improving access to comprehensive, quality herbal health care, education, and services. A few things to think about when you're incorporating accessibility into your herbal classroom is one, the location of your class. Is it on a bus line or is it physically accessible to someone in a wheelchair? Now, keep in mind, you might not be able to be 100% accessible, but there are efforts you can make to do so. When I first started teaching about herbs, I taught in my living room. And it wasn't very accessible, but I had to start somewhere. And teaching in my living room gave me the experience and the comfort I needed to become confident as an herbal teacher. And eventually, I was able to get a public space that is handicap accessible and on a bus line. The point is that you can take small steps to become accessible. You can also create accessibility in the herbal classroom by introducing the sliding scale model. This model lets people who make less money pay less for the class, and people who make more money pay more for the class. And this doesn't mean that everybody's going to be paying on the low end. We all need to make a living. So, as an herbal teacher, you can create the model that works for you. For example, you might only let three people in on the lower end and five people in on the higher end. This way, the cost is not fleeting pocket change for some people and a big commitment to other people. It promotes economic justice. Another way to create accessibility to herbal education is to offer scholarships. Offer scholarships to someone who wouldn't necessarily be able to afford your program. Another way of creating accessible herbal education is through the work trade model. This model promotes a trade between the teacher and the student of some sort of service that is equivalent price to the herbal program. This model perhaps requires the most work planning and accountability out of all these programs that I've mentioned. The herbal teacher needs to make sure that the work that's getting done is quality work, it's getting done on time, and it's a fair trade for both the teacher and the student. One dynamic I try to avoid in this work trade model is replicating systems of power and oppression that are already in place in our society. For me, this means I keep all my trade herbal related. I don't have people of lower incomes cleaning my house.
Whenever we talk about accessibility, we need to talk about addressing privilege and understanding the class divide. Now, one of the things that can come up when you're talking about class and has come up in our trainings is feelings of either shame or guilt based on your class and privilege. And in our trainings, we do try and address this through journaling exercises and exercises that help the participants envision what they want in the future instead of focusing on their past experiences. What can we do to change this? And how can we become more aware of people's situations in our community or our clients or our students? It's really all about raising awareness. We start the training with definitions so everybody can be on the same page as far as what does class mean, what does economic capital mean, social capital, cultural capital, classism, what makes a person working class, low income, middle class, owning class. The participants most likely have read some of resources and readings we've sent out about the history of class and class struggle. And at this point, we'll break out into breakout groups where people can discuss what they read and how they felt about it. And after we're finished with our breakout groups, we bring everybody back to the large group, where we get everybody to participate in an exercise called Move Up, Move Back. Now, in this exercise, we have everybody stand in a straight line all the way across the classroom, or if you can, go outside. And the facilitator asks a series of questions, and participants are asked to step forward if the answer is yes, or step backwards if the answer is no. The questions range from whether or not you've graduated from college, you own your own car, you have financial debt, or if you or your family ever needed public assistance, if you had health insurance growing up, if you have access to social capital, if you have a savings account. And the purpose of these questions and participants moving forward or backwards is to show the class divide within the room. Some people often feel uncomfortable with this exercise, but that's okay. After everybody's done with the questions, everybody kind of looks around, then we break people up into groups based on where they're standing. The participants are then asked to do some personal reflections within the group and to process any feelings that might have come up during the exercise. After this, we get everybody back together in the large group and ask a series of questions to the group, like how does class affect healthcare as we see it in our communities? What would a class-blind healthcare system look like? After we gather all these answers, we ask the big question. We have a board where we envision what our ideal healthcare system would look like that would serve everybody regardless of their income. At this point, different models are explored: sliding scale, free clinics, CSH, community supported herbalism, work trade, free classes, community clinics. So the whole point of this training is so that the participant will understand the class divide and understand their privilege or lack of, to process emotions around these subjects, and to collectively brainstorm ways to change our practices, schools, conferences, to be more inclusive of all classes. So that wraps up all we're going to talk about regarding accessibility. Now we're going to move on to the very large subject of medicalisms. When we first started organizing these trainings, we had each of the medicalisms in its own training category. And as we started to develop the trainings, we saw that all of these isms were rooted from the same system of oppression. And most of our trainings focus on language, history, and the current thought patterns on each of the subjects. So let's start with the first training, sexism. Now, participants in this training are asked a variety of questions and participate in a variety of exercises which discuss a few key questions. How are women treated differently within the herbal community and in healthcare? What language and attitudes can be changed to create more equality? Participants are also encouraged to journal and express feelings or traumas that they've experienced because of sexism. Now, the second medicalism that we talk about in our trainings is racism. So, this subject can be extremely triggering for participants. And this is where it's really important to think about those ground rules and communicating with compassion. The first part of this exercise is for participants to break up into groups and to go over specific instances where they might have experienced racism or witnessed racism in the herbal community or in the healthcare system. Participants are also asked to define what internalized racism is. Facilitators also give specific examples of racism that has happened within the herbal community and within the healthcare system. The training also encourages participants and herbal teachers to understand cultural and race sensitivity. For example, a white herbalist might walk in and introduce himself or herself as a Chinese herbalist, which we know that herbalist isn't meaning to offend anybody by saying they're a Chinese herbalist. And we can usually assume that people's intentions are good. This class explores why this statement might be offensive to a Chinese person. Participants are also asked to look at historical context of oppression and racism. We also explore present-day oppression and racism within the herbal community and the healthcare system. Participants often leave with the understanding that change starts with us. If we are open to listening to another story about racism and oppression, can really help an herbalist, herbal practitioner, or herbal teacher understand why it's so important to address our language and make our practices more inclusive. The third and fourth subjects we're going to talk about under the term medicalism is ageism and ableism. Now, the format for these two trainings are similar. The facilitator opens up the discussion with any comments or questions on the readings, the pre-readings that were done by the participants. Then the facilitator goes over definitions. What is ageism? What is ableism? How has it changed from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, till now? And then participants are asked to address specific instances that they've seen either ageism or ableism within the herbal community or the healthcare system. The training wraps up with thoughts and plans for the future. How can we change this? What kind of systems can we create to create a more inclusive, supportive herbal community and healthcare system? The next politically compassionate subject we address in our trainings is trans health. The first part of this training goes over basic terminology: sex, gender identity, gender expression, male to female, female to male, intersex, transgender, transsexual, and genderqueer. The second part of this training is to go over gender pronouns. And then we have everybody in the group go around and state their preferred pronoun. Now, we're all familiar with the pronouns he or she and apply them to people who we assume identify as male or female. And to some folks who don't have any experience with the subject, this language might seem insignificant. But the act of misgendering in a classroom, in a public space, can affect an individual on a personal level far more than you might realize. Making a little effort to call someone by the pronoun that they choose and acknowledging that a male-female binary does not fit the vast spectrum of identities. Pronouns are important because they indicate a degree of respect and an acknowledgement that not everybody fits into the male-female binary. The second part of the training addresses specific instances within herbalism and the healthcare system that can be really hard for transgender people. From intake forms that only include male-female pronouns to using bathrooms, public bathrooms that are male-female only, and also specific instances at all women herbal conferences. How can we, as an herbal community, come together to address these situations? The next part of the training addresses that. And the last part of the training addresses herbal and nutritional care for the transgender community, specific to supporting the endocrine system while someone is on hormones,
or surgery support for someone transitioning. This class creates the space for practitioners, herbal practitioners, to ask questions and understand transgender health care. The next part of the health justice trainings that we introduce is mental health. Participants in this training are asked a lot of questions about the current state of mental health. Who is mental health for? How do we know when someone's going into a crisis? Is it ever right to institutionalize individuals against their will, to drug them against their will? What is the relationship between systems of oppression, such as patriarchy, racism, classism, homophobia, and transphobia, and mental health? Participants are then asked to redefine mental health based on the theory of neurodiversity. Neurodiversity is an approach to mental health that suggests diverse neurological conditions appear as a result of normal variations in the human genome. Neurodiversity originated in the late 1990s and asserts that neurological differences should be recognized and respected as a social category on par with gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or status. Neurodiversity advocates promote support systems that allow those who are neurodivergent to live their lives as they are, rather than be coerced or forced to adopt uncritical accepted ideas of normality or to conform to a clinical ideal. There is a neurodiversity movement, similar to the international civil rights movement, that frames autism, bipolarity, and other neurotypes as natural human variation rather than pathologies or disorders, and advocates and rejects the idea that neurological differences need to be or can be cured, and they believe them to be authentic forms of human diversity, self-expression, and being. Just want to note that these definitions of neurodiversity are definitions that I'm reading from neurodiversity websites. Then we move on to the history of mental health linguistics. We go over the history of words that we commonly use today. Words like crazy, insane, mad, retarded, idiot, hysterical. We ask group questions like, do using these terms today enforce stereotypes? And by using these words lightly, are we belittling the mental health struggles that people face? We wrap up this training with a quick look at scope of practice for herbalists. What does it mean being a safe herbalist when you're working with someone on conventional medications? What ethical decisions are you going to have to make? Do you have the time and energy? What are the social and cultural values of the person you're working to support? The last part of this training is looking at when to go for outside help. The next subject that we talk about in our health justice conversations is cultural appropriation. Now, when we first started having these conversations about 10 years ago at the RadHerb conferences, many, many herbalists were very upset by this. They assumed that we, the organizers, were just pointing fingers and telling people that they can't practice other cultures' herbal medicine, which was not true. We were just creating space for these conversations to happen and for diverse voices to be heard on the subject. Outside of RadHerb, I hadn't heard of the herbal community having these conversations until recently. The herbal community was outraged when they found out that a small company had trademarked the traditional herbal term fire cider. For a lot of herbalists, this was a very clear-cut example of cultural appropriation. A corporation comes in, doesn't have a connection to the traditional term, trademarks it so the herbal community cannot use it. Now this term is only available for profit. The herbal community launched a boycott against this company, and a legal battle has ensued, where the organizers of the boycott, myself included, are now being sued for organizing the boycott and for trademark infringement. So let's get into what is cultural appropriation and what is cultural borrowing. Cultural appropriation is the adoption or the use of elements of one culture by members of a different culture.
Cultural appropriation can include a dominant culture capitalizing off an oppressed culture's traditions. Then there's cultural borrowing, and the definition of cultural borrowing is taking ideas and practices from another culture, ethnic, or religion. An example of cultural borrowing is a Christian practicing some Buddhist concepts. Cultural borrowing can also include the sharing of food and technological advances between cultures. Now, this kind of thing happens naturally over time, and it's not something that is wrong or bad. However, cultural borrowing can easily turn into cultural appropriation. And in our training, we try to show herbalists the difference. In the next part of the training, we ask herbalists, specifically herbalists that are borrowing from another culture for their healing practices, to answer all the questions on our cultural appropriation checklist. Questions like, how much do I know about this particular tradition? How do I respect it and not misrepresent it? What do I know of the history and experience of the people from whom I'm borrowing? Is this borrowing distorting, watering down, or misrepresenting the tradition? Is the meaning changed? Is this overgeneralizing the culture? What is the motivation for cultural borrowing? What is being sought and why? How do the owners of the tradition feel about pieces of the tradition being borrowed? If artifacts and or rituals from other cultures are being sold, where does the money go? Is this spirituality healthy for the borrowers? How can we acknowledge rather than exploit the contributions of all people? This cultural appropriation checklist is in the book Reckless Borrowing or Appropriate Cultural Sharing by Jacquie James. A few examples of cultural borrowing or appropriation that we see in the herbal community is Native American spirituality, clothing, dress, dreadlocks, foods, shamanism, smudge burning, and Asian and Eastern spirituality and herbal practices. Now, in all of our trainings, we are not providing answers. We create the forum for participants to discuss the subject based on their experiences. So one cultural appropriation training may be very, very different than another cultural appropriation training. We work to provide resources and reading so everybody can be on the same page and have a great understanding of the historical context of cultural appropriation. Now, in these trainings, we aren't assuming that any one herbalist has the right to use any plant more than any other culture or people. What we're really looking at is the history of the cultures that are being borrowed from. You can ask yourself, does the culture that I'm borrowing from have a history of genocide? And is my culture part of the dominant culture that created that genocide? We understand that we can't change the past, but we know that we can move forward with compassion and actively listen to the people we're borrowing from, without ego and without offense. It all starts with taking the time to have these conversations compassionately, being open to change, being open to different ideas. It's funny, in the last 10 years, I've participated in at least 20 different cultural appropriation discussions. And I've really come to understand that there are no right answers. It's really all about how we go about having the conversation and actively listening to people who feel they are appropriated from and giving back if we are borrowing from a certain culture. So this concludes the five subjects that we focus on in health justice: accessibility, medicalism, trans health, mental health, and cultural appropriation. One of the other things we focus on in our trainings is how to be an ally. In order to talk about how to be an ally, we need to talk about what is an ally. According to Webster's New World Dictionary of the American Language, an ally is someone, quote, joined with another for a common purpose. The Gender Education Center defines allies to the gay, lesbian, bi, trans community as, quote, people who support us who may or may not be part of our community. These are people who believe in the human rights of all people,
who demonstrate by their presence and actions their acceptance and celebration of diversity among people. I would venture to say that most herbalists I know could stand behind that. And becoming an ally does not have to be difficult. It can be as little as participating in a conversation like the one we're having in these health justice trainings. Becoming aware of issues that diverse communities face is a great way to start being an ally, especially if you're surrounded by a certain diverse population. Knowing and understanding facts, statistics, laws, policies, and culture is a great way to start becoming an ally. Encourage and promote an atmosphere of respect. Acknowledge, appreciate, and celebrate differences among individuals and within groups. Be a safe and open person to talk with. Share your knowledge. Action is the only way to change society as a whole. Stand up for and fight for human rights. A few other tangible, easy ways to be an ally is by researching and reading books about communities that are around you. You can be aware of and sensitive to issues that these communities face. You can attend cultural events. One of the things I'd like to do as an ally is I use my senses. The first thing is active listening, to people's stories. Another way to be an ally is by watching. Looking around at an herb conference or an herb class or anywhere and looking to see who's different. They could be different by age, by their abilities, by their gender, by their race, by their size. A good ally will go up to someone who's different, look them in the eyes, introduce yourselves, and listen to their story and connect. It's really important for herbal students to see this coming from the teachers, the organizers, and the leaders of the herbal community. We can really affect change if it's coming from the people who have the most experience. The herbal students will follow your lead. The next thing I want to address is where it's appropriate to have these health justice conversations. Obviously, in these trainings is probably the best space. Herbal teachers can create space in their classrooms to have these conversations. Herbal organizers can also add these type of classes and trainings to your conferences. One thing to consider in having a goal of creating a more diverse herbal community is who's participating. I really think it's important for the folks that are involved in the herbal community now currently to have these conversations together before you make efforts to invite other diverse populations in, or even invite diverse populations to be a part of this conversation. It's not anyone else's job to help us herbalists deal with our own internalized issues. And where is it not a productive space to have these conversations? I have witnessed and been a part of Facebook conversations about health justice that have turned into personal insults and mudslinging. And I learned my lesson on that, and I will not be engaging on Facebook about health justice issues anymore. I want to address a term that's used in the social justice community called calling out. I've seen this done extremely well, and I've seen this go haywire. As an herbal student, what do you do when your teacher says something that's inherently racist or sexist? Is it appropriate to stop the class and ask the teacher to clarify? Or do you wait until after class and go up to the teacher privately and ask them to explain? Either way, you're taking a risk and you might get a defensive teacher, or you might embarrass them publicly, which would make them even more defensive. And herbal teachers, how do you do this with your students? Do you stop class and ask people to clarify their statements? This is where the health justice ground rules really come in handy. If you present these rules at the beginning of the class, either the teacher or the student is held accountable and agrees to these specific set of guidelines. Honestly, I've been using these guidelines for the last 10 years in my classes and at all of the RadHerb conferences that we've organized. I can tell you that these guidelines do get brought up every once in a while, and we do need to sit through and talk some stuff out. But it usually ends up in a learning moment and a growing moment together.
So it's really all about setting the tone in your classes and conferences for these conversations to happen in a productive way. So let's get started. Let's look at some easy ways to incorporate health justice principles into your practice this week. First thing you can do is include the Health Justice Classroom Guidelines in your next class's handouts and go over them and talk about them and see what people think about them. The next step is posting a few signs in your classroom or clinic supporting health justice and diversity. This can be anything from stickers or slogans supporting people that are fighting against oppression. This will identify you as an ally. The next thing you can do this week to start incorporating health justice principles into your practice is to read. Read about the issues that the communities around you face. The next thing you can do is listen. Listen to the people around you and what they have to say about their issues that they face. Another thing you could do to support social justice is to share your struggles and share the struggles that the herbal community faces. Share what's happening to small herbal companies from the FDA. Share that our herbal traditional language is being co-opted and trademarked. By sharing our struggles and listening to other people's struggles, we can create solidarity and stand together against oppression.
Well, thanks so much for listening in. I really appreciate it. We've worked really hard and thought a lot about these trainings and these conversations, and there's a lot of heart behind them. And I just wanted to thank everybody for supporting me and Kathy and Nikki, the Firesider 3, in our legal battle against the trademark Firesider. And I'm going to leave you for the next few minutes with resources. They'll either be websites or reading or places where you can find more information about health justice or the individual subjects that I talked about tonight. Well, thanks, y'all, and hope you have a great rest of your week. Bye.
We farm all day, get tan in the sun. Herbs in the field for everyone. If you come around here, we're working all day, growing some seed to keep you healthy, tending our fields organically. Don't use pesticides, they're nasty. Plants are healers, we think they're the best. Bonafide hustle and have to harvest them fresh. Nettle, mullein, sage. Put them on the rack, let them dry for days. Bring them to the processing room. They'll be remedies soon. We farm all day, get tan in the sun. Herbs in the field for everyone. If you come around here, we're working all day, growing some seeds to keep you healthy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'll make you some tea. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'll keep you healthy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'll love pharmacy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'll make you some tea. Process herbs all day. Sticks and stems and seeds then blends. Package them when we're done. Herbal medicine through your system. No one on the corner has clover like us. Tea on the burner, hormone balance. We pack and deliver like UPS trucks. Visit the market, you'll find us. Tincture, blends, and salves. Make them in our kitchen for you to have. Healthcare for everyone. Herbal medicine through your system. No one on the corner has anise like us. Tea on the burner, digestive balance. We pack and deliver like UPS trucks. Visit the shop, you'll find us. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and make you some tea. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and keep you healthy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and love pharmacy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and make you some tea.
Pharmacy herbs, healthcare anomaly. Yeah, I got more herbs than the GNC, so no big pharma business. Some.
summer, summer, summer. Summer herbs they grow. Summer, 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 summer. Summer herbs they grow. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'm making some tea. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'm keep you healthy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'm love pharmacy. All I wanna do is farm, 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 and I'm take your money.
Records in the KGB. So, no funny business. You're-